Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, welcome back to our 60-plus panel discussion of Moore's Utopia Book 2. Now, remember from last time that Book 2 is Raphael Hithloday's description of how society is organized on the island nation called Utopia. Now, I might also mention from last week's program that Raphael's full name can mean talker of nonsense. So, and again, I think I mentioned this last time, it just means to me that Thomas More believed that a utopian society is great to think about, but is not likely to happen. And so, but if you've listened to last week's discussion, you might find out that the panel here thinks that maybe Moore's Utopia isn't that great anyway. So, but back with me again in the studio is the 60-plus panel. Welcome, Mr. Derryhope.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Welcome, Mrs. Depperly.
Thank you.
It's great to have you back here, both of you. So let's begin today talking about, let's talk about utopian travel. And after our discussion from last week, I want to know, why would you even want to travel?
Why would you need to? Everything looks alike.
That's right. Why would you need to? But we began last time, if you haven't listened to the program, listeners, make sure you listen to it, because Moore does a great job of really painting this really beautiful utopian picture. But it seems like to us that society is getting really restrictive. And it really gets restrictive with utopian travel. Uh-huh. You know, and here's what bugged me the most at the first, is you've got to get a permission slip.
Right.
It's like, it reminded me of being in high school. Okay, you need to go to the bathroom. Well, here's your permission slip to go to the men's room, you know. But you had to go to the leader. It definitely wasn't the Senate. I forget which one it is. It's at the, or even the names, the Triban?
One's the Tranibores. I think it's the higher one, and the lower one's the Sycophants. I want to call them the Sycophants, but they're the Sycophants or something.
Are they crazy people? You psycho? You got to go see the psycho to get it passed.
Right.
And then it's like you get a pass to go to a city that looks just like your city anyway.
And then you have to have a passport, and you think, well,
yeah,
is that to travel within your own country? You have to have a passport?
Yes. And then to travel out of the country, that's an extra.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it would be to travel outside of the country. What you have to do for that.
But the thing that was kind of most shocking about it, after all this, remember Book One, all this discussion about punishment for stealing and all that. So if you decide to travel, not only did you have to get a permission from the sycophant, you had to get a permission from your family as well. Hmm. So there's family rule. You know, whoever the ancient is.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. If he didn't have a brain meld that day, you could ask him. You know? Oh, are you my kid? You know? But anyway, but then if you didn't ask permission, okay, they would punish you for doing it once. If you did it a second time, they made you a slave.
Right, right.
So, you know, I remember when I was a little kid, I was so mad at something, and I said, "I'm going to run away from home." And my dad said, "Well, go get a stick and get your handkerchief and stuff it with some goodies and go." You know, so that's, I learned my lesson real quick. You know, I got it like a block away, and I realized, oh, where am I going to sleep tonight? Oh, you know, who's going to take care of me if it rains? You know, what happens if a dog chases me? You know, so I didn't want to leave that. I didn't want to run away then. But it does sound like they were really almost trying to prevent people from running away from the society.
Well, it seemed like it, because then if you traveled, you obviously didn't stay in a hotel. You went and stayed in one of these homes that, you know, everyone could go to any home they wanted to stay in. So here you are with living in a house with people that, you know, may not be your blood relatives. Mm-hmm. And then here come these travelers, you know, coming in that sort of unannounced. So it's not clear how all that works, but it's mm-hmm. sort of yeah. it's very disruptive.
Yes.
They didn't have telephones then, so you couldn't call.
No.
So, yes.
No, there was no texting back and forth.
No, so. And if they were 25 miles away, it took you a long time to get there.
Right.
And so, but anyway, it just seemed to me that that's when that there are just certain ticks there that I thought, I don't know if I'd like, I don't know if I, that's certainly not my idea of utopia.
No, no.
And I think that is what Moore is driving at. He really wants us to think about and evaluate these things. Mm-hmm. And so, but you know, he does do a good job at writing because I feel like I could go there.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So. Okay. Anything else there?
Well, he does say that you get a wagon and a slave to go with you.
Oh, that's
so when
right.
you're
I
traveling,
forgot about
you do
that.
Get a wagon and a slave to go with you, yeah. And the slave sort of takes care of you as you go. Now, how a slave does that, I'm not quite sure, because if you're going to a city that's, you know, 30 cities away from where you are, how does he do that? So,
yeah. Well, what if you were a traveler that didn't get permission, and you became a slave to the travelers? That might be a fun occupation.
Right. And then the question is, why would you want to go to a city that's 30 cities away when they all look alike anyway?
Exactly. So
just go to the one nearest by and you had it, you know.
Okay. So, Thomas, forgive us for picking on you so much. All right. So I think that was just, I mean, he makes such a big deal out of utopian travel. But, again, it doesn't seem like there's much fun in it.
No.
You know, at all. And even the Thomas Moore, the character in the book, I mean, he's traveling all over the world mm-hmm. in ships. That sounds like a lot more fun. You know, he's going to Castile. He's, you know, he went to all these different countries. You know, he went far east, you know, and so, but here you need a pass to get to the next city.
Right.
You know, so. All right, let's talk about, I thought another interesting thing in the book was he spent, Ithloday spends a lot of time on the subject of the pursuit of pleasure. And I guess if you were a utopian, you'd probably need some pleasure.
Yes. Probably so.
I never thought when we chose this book that I'd be cracking so many jokes about, because I think utopia is a serious subject, because I do believe it's possible. But I think Moore does show us how challenging it is to produce
right.
it. So.
Well, even he says at the end of the book that he, some of these things he can understand and others not. You know, sort of like this is just sort of everything that's in this continent, but that doesn't mean I agree with everything, but everything is there the way it is, and you sort of think what you pick and choose what you like about it. So.
Right, and he is cutting on the aristocracy, as mm-hmm, we talked
right.
about last time. Okay. So what are your thoughts on the pleasures that they pursue and in utopia? So I have my favorites.
Well, one thing that I think is nice about it is they actually have they hold in high esteem the pleasure of reading.
Oh, that's my favorite.
And the pleasure of education.
You stole it right
out of
mine.
Sorry, I'll let you talk about
that.
No,
you can do it.
But one of the things that they seem to abhor is hunting and gaming and all these things that are very popular in England, you know, falconry and all those types
yeah.
of things. We read a book at one point about falconry, wasn't it?
Oh, we did.
Yes, yeah.
Very depressing book.
Yeah, it was a diary. It was a real right. actual thing.
And
yeah.
so those kinds of things are despised in this society, and it's considered that killing animals is a terrible form of butchery. In fact, even for their meals, I think they have the slaves butcher the animals because the people don't want to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting aspect of society, that they were averse to the yeah, shedding of blood.
They had butchers that they considered slaves.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I think even in that, it shows their lack of understanding of human nature.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, personally, you know, like, I've always been interested in hunting. I've never been a hunter. But when I think about, you know, seeing these beautiful little deer and you go shoot them, you know, and then you have to gut them. Mm. I thought, okay, well, maybe I don't really want to be a be a hunter. Yeah. But I mean, God did create animals to be eaten, so someone does have to do it. And actually, in ancient Israel, the Levites are the ones that actually did the butchering, so it was done properly and for health reasons. And so in that standpoint, the butchers are not a bad thing, but the fact they call them slaves, that kind of bugs me. But the point is, I can see where, you know, in society, that even like the violent movies are getting more violent, and yet people are so anti-guns that they're saying, well, it's the guns that are butchering the people, when really we have all these movies, movie after movie after movie after movie, that has this senseless violence. And to me, it's going to make people more violent. It's going to open that door while we can get violent.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, that was the reason why in this society they didn't want the children to see animals butchered, because they thought that it would teach them the wrong thing. It would teach them violence.
Right.
And so that's why they wanted a special class of people to do that and the children not see it. But they didn't, you know, again, what's always missing in this equation is the presence of human nature, you know, and that influence.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, because, I mean, because there's a time and a place for that, but it's the idea of taking pleasure in the hunting aspect and seeing the blood and, you know,
the pleasure of killing,
and that's what is wrong. What I think is interesting, if I'm going to read this something, he talks here about pleasure. But he actually talks about in terms of virtue. And that was interesting that he says he's talking about, you know, about nature, that nature cannot direct us to be good and kind to others, yet at the same time to be unmerciful and cruel to ourselves. Thus, as they define virtue to be living according to nature, so they imagine that nature prompts all people on to seek after pleasure as the end of all they do. So it's like we all basically are seeking pleasure. So I thought that was interesting that he talks about that. And, of course, then deciding what pleasure is, you know, that's another thing we can talk about here. But
right. Well, I think in some ways, he does talk about the beauty of the environment. You know, he talks about that's very pleasurable. So you do want to make sure that you have, you know, this clean environment or this uplifting environment. Even here at the college, at Herbert W. Armstrong College, we produce, really, it's like we're a little Garden of Eden, you know, in Oklahoma, in central Oklahoma. We have a campus that is, our parking lots are probably some of the most beautifully decorated parking lots you can find, with the trees and the flowers and the shrubs around them. You know, and we built fountains on the campus. There's a spring-fed lake on the campus. There's another lake that it collects water, which we use during summer camp for canoeing. And our students are put into beautiful dormitories. You know, we have Armstrong Auditorium for, you know, concert events. You know, we have, you know, our private church services in there. You know, we have, you know, the classrooms, which are beautifully, you know, maintained. You know, so it is a right environment. And so I do think he talks about the beauty of nature and seeing beautiful things. And even you said, he talks about one of the pleasures of life is education or reading. Mm. And that's really true. I mean, that's what JBL is all about. We want people to read and read different books, because there is a lot of pleasure in reading. And I get, well, a lot of enjoyment out of reading. I mean, but I get paid for it too. I mean, that's what's really great. I mean, my whole occupation is based on writing and reading and teaching, which are three of the things I like to do. It's not like, but I don't have to go out to the farm every 2 years. You know, so. but I do think, to go back to the whole thing with hunting, he's really cutting at the English nobility. Right. I mean, because they were, yeah. I mean, the people in England today are still frustrated over these noble lands where they have all of this game. No one else has access to it but the aristocracy and the royalty. And that's really a sore point. You know, if you get caught, you know, at the time of like Henry VIII or even, you know, Henry V, if you got caught poaching, you could be executed for taking the king's deer. And so, you know, people could starve and the king could go out and slay deer, you know, kind of thing. But it's also, when he talks about gambling, I mean, I think they call those foolish things, and piling up money, I think, is also funny. But one of the things I looked for in this pursuit of pleasure that I didn't see much of, and we did find it, but he doesn't talk about sexual pleasure. He doesn't name that, you know. But then Derry found this. This is we all have a little different book now. But this is kind of very bawdy, as you would say. He says, pleasures of, I'll just read this paragraph. This is in, I finally went and bought a Cambridge edition, by the way, to help understand some of it. But he, in this quote, he says, pleasures of the body, they also divide into two classes. The first is that which fills the senses with immediate delight. And I'm assuming he's thinking about smelling good food, you know, tasting a nice dessert. We had a wonderful dinner that our junior, senior girls prepared for us the other night here at the college. And the cake was just out of this world. It was like, wow, that was really pleasurable. So sometimes this happens when bodily organs that have been weakened by natural heat are restored with food and drink. That means if you get sick and then you become well again. He says, sometimes it happens when we eliminate some excess in the body, as when we move our bowels or generate children. That's the only nuance or illusion possibly about the pleasure of sex. Or I think another version is propagate children. Or relieve an itch somewhere by rubbing or scratching it. So that's, to me, that's total medieval thinking.
Right. So. And he does put the excess on the pleasures of the mind.
Yes.
And he says the pleasures of the mind is in lie in knowledge and in that delight which the contemplation of truth carries with it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting, that, that truth would be something that that would bring pleasure, even though there's not much truth there. You know.
Right. And that, I mean, there is, I mean, even the Apostle Paul talks about there's the lust of the body and there's a lust of the mind. Right. So you can misuse your mind. You can use it for wrong purposes that really, let's say, maybe would make you immoral or make you you know, not happy. But I think it's interesting. He doesn't talk a lot about the pleasure of sex, but he does talk about in this whole section on, you know, marriage and divorce. I think it's interesting. He talks about the punishment of premarital sex. I'm going to read this paragraph to you. So they did have laws. They did have punishment. It says women do not marry till they are 18, nor men till they are 22. So there was a specific law about when someone could be married, and I do think that's interesting. It says clandestine premarital intercourse, if discovered and proved, brings severe punishment on both man and woman. And the guilty parties are forbidden to marry for their whole lives unless the governor, by his pardon, remits the sentence. And so we know that young people make mistakes, but man, that's severe punishment. Mm. If they're caught, they can't marry for the rest of their lives. Now, I did do a little bit of research on this, and when Moore wrote this book, Utopia, I guess syphilis was at epidemic proportions in Europe at that time. And so there was a lot of, obviously, you know, premarital sex going on. And, you know, it's a problem. Even I just read a news report on the state of Oklahoma, and people are very concerned because syphilis is at epidemic proportions in Oklahoma. So, you know, so for all of the, you know, warnings and the, you know, the announcements about STDs, you know, it's still rampant. So it's you know, I think every society, and again, this is the human nature element, no matter how many laws you have or how many instructions you have, human nature is human nature, and people are going to do what they want.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. So, But this, he goes on to say, he said, also both the father, now I think this is interesting. Also, both the father and the mother of the household where the offense was committed suffer public disgrace for having been remiss in their duty. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that's actually a good thing in Utopia, is that, you know, so many parents today are not teaching their children the proper use of sex. You know, I'm doing this article on, you know, indoctrination of, you know, the transgender indoctrination is rising. And what I read about some parents who allow their children to be gender fluid is really, it's child abuse. You know, they're encouraging it. And, you know I have to be careful in writing the article, but what's going on is just really wrong. And, you know, those parents should be subject to
a fine, at least.
Yeah, to be told it is, you know, it is a problem. You need to be teaching your children. They said the reason they punish this offense so severely is that they suppose few people would join in married love with confinement to a single partner and all the petty annoyances that married life involves unless they were strictly restrained from promiscuous intercourse. Now, I partly agree with, I mean, I definitely agree with that, is that, you know, marriage, sex was made for marriage, and marriage was made for sex. I mean, that's the way I was taught all my life. And, you know, but here, I did think Thomas More must have had a wife that gave him petty annoyances, because I thought that part was funny. but in some ways, too, I mean, sex and marriage is a wonderful thing. And it does draw two people together for life. And, well, to be honest, sexual pleasure can get rid of petty annoyances. You know, we can just be honest about that. So I thought that was good. But the one thing that I'm really kind of surprised about in the whole idea of the utopia is there's no idea of law. Like, they don't even talk about the Ten Commandments.
Well, and the point that you brought up, which does flow through the book quite a bit, is this sense of responsibility. In everything, everyone has a sense of responsibility. But where does that come from? You know, it's like...
It comes from law.
Is this, right, it comes from law. Right. And yet there's no law. So it's like this wishful thinking that people are going to have the sense of responsibility
that
they don't
have.
That's
wishful thinking,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And
It's the way people think, is that, well, everybody has good in them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
right.
That's an absolute lie.
Right.
Just be honest. We're not good. I mean, even the lawyer went to Christ and said, good master, and what do I need to do to gain the kingdom? He says, why call me good?
Right.
You know,
right.
There's none good but one, and that's God. And so that is a reality that every human being on this earth has to face up to eventually.
Right.
You know, we're not good.
Right.
If we have an opportunity and no one's watching, we're going to do what we want.
And that's what's missing from this book.
Yes.
I mean, it's the whole premise is that you put a nice environment and you put certain laws that make sense, and you remove the things in society that seem to cause problems, which are the economic problems, mm-hmm. the gold and the silver and the accumulation of wealth with one group of people. You remove all of that, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. And that's, you know, we've seen societies where that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I have something. Can I say
oh,
something?
Oh, you can say whatever
well,
you want
I,
to.
I found this. I was just,
this is utopia in here today.
this is like a summary of... I think a summary of what he believed is the result of this utopia. This is not me. I read this. The result is a nation of happy people, and the chief causes of dissension in other nations are avoided: greed, theft, social classes, party factions, and even murder. All other governments are viewed as conspiracies of the rich to keep the common people in subjection. So to me, it seems like that is a summary of what he's blaming all these things in society as the problem, and like you say, not human nature.
Right. It's the economy.
It's the economy.
That is totally right. Communist thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you got to change the economy to make everybody happy, and the economic model is not the problem.
No, right.
It's human nature,
and that's what he clearly states in here, that over and over again, it's the private property. and money mm-hmm. are the two things that are the chief evils that, mm-hmm. that have caused society to become corrupt, and not human nature. You know, mm-hmm. of course, that doesn't enter in the equation at all. But we know that's what it really is. That's right. what the cause is.
And the thing is, that's really fascinating, is in ancient Israel, the two most important things were ownership of property and a free economy.
Right. Right.
That's biblical. And that's not here. I just want to say one other thing. And this is a little bit I want to talk about two things. I don't know if we're going to have time. But this book has its little porn art. It's a little bit of porn in the book, too. I don't know if you picked up on it. And it says when a young couple wants to get married, they're allowed to see each other naked. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, oh, come on. That's porn. that's all that is you know, it's so they're not disappointed after they get married. So, but that was also a problem in Israel.
Right.
I mean, even Christ pointed that out. I mean, that a guy would, you know, if he married a woman and she took her clothes off, he didn't like it, he would divorce her.
Right.
You know,
right.
that was porn all the right. way. Okay, the other thing, we are running out of time, but I'm really kind of shocked they believed in euthanasia. Hmm. I mean, that was allowed in Utopia. If an older person they knew they had a terminal illness and they weren't going to make it, they were allowed to. Hmm. It's like suicide was accepted, so... Well, it looks like we're running out of time again, and I think what I'll do is next time I'll just give you some of my final conclusions on Thomas More's Utopia, and I think I'll answer the question, is a utopia possible? So you can listen for that next time. Now, also, the next time, after that, then, we will start our first discussion on George Orwell's classic 1984. So remember, we'll be using the Signet Classic Edition. If you have not gotten that, you can get it at Amazon.com for about $8. You can also go to abebooks.com, and you'll probably get it there for about $6. So please do that. Don't miss our discussion on 1984. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.